Yes, the familiar sound of Phil's Radio Shack stopwatch ushers us into another exciting Blind Like Me show. By the way, I was told that Radio Shack had been purchased by Circuit City. And that now they would be called, they're going to be called The Source from Circuit City or something like that, because Radio Shack denotes cheap merchandise, I guess. So they're going to abandon the Radio Shack name. Anyway, Noelia Dillingham, how are you?
Fine.
You're not sleepy, you said.
No.
You're awake and ready to be interviewed, huh? Is that
sure.
correct? Well, it's good to have you with us. You're usually a very bright and happy person. I have found you to be that way. Like you're having a good time and you want to make sure everybody else does. I mean, that's what I get from talking to you. Is that kind of the way you feel? I mean, that's...
Yes, absolutely.
You seem to be a happy lady. Now, you're totally blind. Is that right?
No.
No?
No, I'm a partial.
You're a partial. How good is your partial vision?
It's a 2200, which is, for a partial, pretty good.
Yeah. It's
pretty
a whole...
good, but not good enough.
Good, but not good. Not good enough to drive, is it? Not good
no,
enough to...
No, it's not.
And is it getting progressively worse, or what is your situation?
I have glaucoma, and it has diminished more of my vision in my right eye. So, yes, it's getting a little worse.
Getting a little worse. So it was actually pretty good at one time?
No. It's always been 2200.
Always been 2200?
Yes.
So, you've been... And it's been this way all your life?
Yes, I was born with cataracts, and when I was 5 months old, down in the valley where I grew up, where I was born, they didn't know what to do with someone like me.
No.
Who, in the 50s, you know, when kids were born, it was a miracle that my father and mother found a hospital or a doctor that would even take me as a patient. And like I said, I was 5 months old, and it was already too late to have any real good results from a surgery. But I have a lot of astigmatism and, you know, all the things that go with cataracts, you know.
Yeah.
Now I have glaucoma on top of it, which is part of it, too.
Well,
I do well. I do okay.
For those of you who don't know or aren't familiar, the Rio Grande Valley is really a notoriously poor part of Texas. It's not a forgotten part of Texas, but they don't have as much lobby power as people in Dallas and San Antonio and Houston do. And it is, to a large extent, people of Latin American or Mexican or Spanish descent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of poverty down there. There shouldn't be, but there is. And they grow, I guess, still a lot of fruit down there.
Yes. Vegetables.
Vegetables, and it's a pretty rich farmland sort of an area. But it's just an area of Texas that has never, and I don't know if that's still true or not. We go to Padre Island, South Padre Island, every summer. And we go over to Brownsville and eat, and we go over to Brownsville and shop. And Brownsville is not far, or Edinburgh, or some of those other towns. What town were you born in down there?
Rio Grande City.
Rio Grande City.
It's in Starr County, notorious for politics.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
And there was a guy named Parr down there at one time.
That's right. He was the man.
He was, wasn't he?
He was your cousin, I bet.
He was not my cousin. But I got a lot of kidding, see, because I'm a George also.
Oh.
My name is George Philip Parr, and he was George Parr. And he was quite an influential politician.
Oh, absolutely.
Some even believe that he might have been... A little on the shady side.
Very much so.
Wouldn't know about that.
He would go get votes from people that were dead.
Well, that's what we Democrats do, isn't it? I mean, that's done in Chicago also. That's not just...
Not just Starr County, huh?
No, but the famous story, and I'm sure you've heard it as well as the rest of us have, of Lyndon Johnson, the way he won the first senatorial race that he won against, was it Coke Stevenson that he ran against? I think he, some buddy of his down in the valleys, gave him a bunch of votes, skewered the election toward and favoring Lyndon Johnson to win. That's whether that story's true or not, I have no idea, but that's the story that has been told.
The Democrats didn't condone it.
Well, I don't know whether
it was the way things were down there.
It's just the way things were down there. It's the way things were in the valley.
Yeah.
The way things were done in the valley.
Yeah, but I tell you, if you weren't with the right party, when that party was on top, your parents didn't have work.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It was bad.
Yeah. So you were really lucky, like you said, to find anyone who knew anything about blindness, weren't you?
Yes, I was. Very much so. And I didn't grow up with a whole lot of help from, you know, my parents didn't know about the school for the blind or any aids that I could have that would help me along.
Yeah.
I would have died for a large print dictionary, for example.
Yeah, because
it would have been a lot of help to me.
You could see well enough to read that large print dictionary?
I could, if I had one.
But you didn't have one.
No.
You didn't know
they existed.
Weren't aware that they even existed. So what did your parents do? Were they farm workers or what?
Yeah, my father was a sharecropper for a white man named George Spears.
Uh-huh.
And him and his uncle were the two men that ran the farm,
mm-hmm.
or the ranch, whatever you want to call it. And
yeah.
My father died when I was five. He had a heart attack and died, and my mother had to move because, well, you know, she couldn't work the farm for the gentleman, and
yeah.
So we moved across to another part of the same little area, same county, where my mother's family lived that had property that was given to my great-grandfather when Texas became part of the U.S., because they were here even then.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mother had some property down there, which is really not good for anything but farming, you know. But we did have a little house my father had purchased before he died. And me and my mom and my sister, we moved into this little one-room house. My uncle built a kitchen, a lean-to kitchen. And we lived there, and we were a pretty happy family. We were around my mother's family. There were a lot of them. There were 12 brothers and sisters.
Your mother had 12 brothers and sisters?
Yes, she did.
But you just had the one sister, that's all?
I only had one sister.
And they were predominantly Catholic?
Yes, it was the only church there was a Catholic church.
Yeah, and so you were raised a Catholic, little Catholic girl?
I was. Yes.
Down in the Rio Grande Valley.
Yes.
And folks, you folks who don't live in Texas or don't know much about Texas, it gets summer in the Rio Grande Valley lasts from the middle of April till the middle of October. It is the sameness every day, hot, 100 degrees every day of the world. Terribly hot, and no air conditioning, no nothing.
But there was one reprieve that we don't have in Houston.
What was that?
At 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock every day, this wind would come. It was amazing.
Yeah.
And it would cool off, and at night you had to cover up.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it was hot in the day, yes. I'm not telling you it isn't. But at night, there was this breeze at 5, 6 o'clock. They would come through and cool everything down every day.
And maybe a little rain come with that?
No, not much rain.
Not much rain.
It didn't rain there like, you know, not like it rains here in Houston.
Yeah, really.
Hot,
dry.
Hot and dry. But, you know, we had a lot of, we didn't have a lot of material things, but there was plenty to do. My mom had chickens, and we had a couple of cows, and one was named Linda Bernice, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, we had when we got bored, my mother would say, go to the woods and get lost. So my sister and I, you know, I didn't ever go by myself because I couldn't, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my sister and I, she was older than me, we'd go into the woods and we'd pick cactus fruit. There was all kinds of cactus fruit to eat, and wild peaches and wild mulberries, and we'd be happy. If the only rule was you didn't cross a fence. You could not go across a fence.
Because that was somebody else's property.
Yes, and you'd really be lost. But, you know, we'd find our way back home in the evening. We'd be gone all day.
And you were just, you were really happy. I mean,
yeah,
you didn't realize what you didn't have.
No, you didn't. Because everybody was in the same shape you were in.
I read it. Do you get Choice Magazine listing? Do you get that? I think it's free that you can, if you don't, you should. It's a little magazine that they send around for blind people that it's like Reader's Digest, except better. I mean, they do articles from all kind of magazines. And I read this article about this guy who was raised in, and I can't remember the country he was raised in, but anyway, when he was a kid, they discovered his father came home from the war and brought home some food in tin cans. Spam and ready-to-eat meals in tin cans, and so they thought they had never seen tin cans before, and they thought they were wonderful. So they made toys, and they'd fill up this tin can. This guy would pull it around. That was his toy. He would pull this tin can behind him. And I remember so well at the blind school a little car that I would pull on a string, as opposed to now when a kid doesn't have the latest video game there, you know.
I know, it's
and
so different.
It is. And you were your childhood, you think, was there was lots of love, and
yeah, there was love, and there was harmony, and you know, our uncles, all of them helped us play ball, you know, we all made our games up, you know, but you did work, you know. When I was 7, we went out to pick cotton, you know.
That did
was
you?
What you had to do, you know, to get by.
Sure. Did you milk the cows?
No. I didn't get to do that, but my mom did.
Your mom milked them every day, so you had fresh milk?
Yeah, we did. Mm-hmm.
At least you had milk and eggs.
Yeah, we had milk and eggs and chickens.
And there wasn't
And pork meat. Once every other month, one of the uncles would kill the pig, and we would have meat.
And the predominant language that was spoken in your house was Spanish?
Yes, it was.
My
mother never did learn English.
Really?
No.
So you didn't know what you didn't have, and you were happy. Go get lost in the woods.
Well,
that's funny.
You know,
I love it.
Yeah, that was a thing. Go get lost in the woods. But you know, I was. It was not till I was in the 7th grade in a public school there in the community where I grew up. I was in a class of 27 children. Three of us had the same name, Noelia. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can. It's a very common Spanish name.
Yes, but now I come to Houston, nobody ever heard it. But down there, you know, it was pretty common. And anyway, I was in the 7th grade, and I had this science teacher who was the first one who ever recognized that I had a problem. And, you know, I had gone all through those grades without help. And when I was, this man, Mr. Ramos was his name, he wasn't from the community, and he had come to work there as right out of high school, right out of college. And he noticed when I looked in the microscope that my drawings were not quite what they were supposed to be, because I couldn't see it. And so he knew of, he had a cousin who was a Commission for the Blind counselor in Laredo, Texas, which was our territory. You know, we were in the Laredo area, you know, part of Stark County, I suppose. Anyway, this man came to see me when I was, it took 2 years for that man to come to see me after that. I mean, in the 7th grade, I was in the 9th grade before the Commission for the Blind actually got involved with me.
In the 9th grade?
Yes.
Wow.
And I had this man, Mr. Garcia, the counselor at the Laredo Commission for the Blind, he came to my home, and he brought his family, because they had to come 200 miles to see us. You know, we were pretty far away.
Yeah.
And those people, they traveled a lot back then, you know, the counselors did. And he brought his family, and they came in my home, and my mother fed everybody. The counselor, his wife, and their 3 kids, and us, all of us.
Somewhere or another, she came up with enough food to feed everybody.
Well, there was always beans, you know, and tortillas. Mama always said, she always expected people to come, and whoever came had to eat there.
Yeah.
And that was just a rule, you know, when you have anybody come over, you feed them. So anyway, this man, he told me that I should learn Braille. So a week or two later, a teacher comes from Laredo to teach me Braille. And he tells me that that I can learn it by looking at it, because I could see it. So I learned Braille 1, and went through the book, and continued on with my schoolwork too, And I had glasses, real thick glasses that the Lions Club bought for me. My mama couldn't afford to buy me.
But you were about 13 now. You were growing up girl.
14 or so.
13 or 14. And this was in, we were up into the 60s now when they didn't send all the kids to the blind school when it was.
Well, yeah, but I never even heard about the blind school until I got out of high school.
Yeah.
I mean, nobody ever suggested that it would be a place that I could go to.
But now they knew as a child that you had an eye problem.
Well, they knew it, but they didn't know how to help me.
Yeah, but
the teachers were not equipped.
So for the first 7 grades of school, you just tried to do the best you could, tried to see.
I improvised, and I don't even know how to tell you how I did it, but I was a good learner, and I stayed on top of classes, and I did my homework. And I made good grades.
And you learned to read print,
yes.
Along with all the other kids.
Yes, I did.
Well, that's
it
pretty neat.
It was amazing, but it wasn't easy. It was a struggle, a very big struggle. Maps was the worst thing. I could not see maps.
Yeah.
And a magnifier, handheld magnifier that we so commonly use nowadays would have been so much help. But I didn't have one.
Well, they were around. You just didn't.
Yeah, they were around. But
you just didn't.
My mother didn't know. They were. She didn't. She was. She didn't know how to read or write. And it was just one of those things that people. And down there, it's even more remote than, like you said. It's behind time.
It is, and it was even more so back then. Because
it's
now
it's better now,
Well, sure, it's better because we have satellite and we have television. I mean, you can have Dish Network in Rio Grande City as well as you can in Houston.
Right.
So they know a lot more about the world. I tell you, let's take just a little short break here and be back and discuss more. Noelia Dillingham from Houston, Texas, is our guest on Blind Like Me. Hang on, back in just a second. A website our crack research team certifies screen reader friendly. Now, with this week's Blind Sight, here's Tim Cummings.
Are you an old-time radio fan? Have you been looking for a place where you can find a lot of shows to purchase from the days of yesteryear? Well, you should take a look at www.billsparks.com. This site contains thousands of old-time radio programs that you can buy on CD in MP3 format, and they're very inexpensive. You can buy something like 50 shows for $5 or $6 on one CD. Everything from Gunsmoke to The Shadow and many others, including some interesting pieces such as they have a collection of Gunsmoke rehearsals, which would probably be very interesting to hear. All different categories, science fiction, mystery, comedy, whatever. I would give it a screen reader friendliness rating of a 10. The website again is www.billsparks.com. For Blind Sights, this is Tim Cummings saying, keep on blind sighting.
If you found a screen reader friendly website you'd like us to mention, send your email to blindlikeme, all one word, at txucom.net. And join us again next time for Blind Sights. Are you on the Blind Like Me list?
And I have made a lot of new friends on the Blind Like Me list that I'll never forget.
Well, them crazy people on that Blind Like Me list just talk about the silliest thing.
To join the Blind Like Me list, send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Okay, I love being on the Blind Like Me list because I'm the moderator and I get to delete people if I want to.
If you enjoy chatting with other blind folks, come join us on the Blind Like Me list. Send a blank email to blindlikeme-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Our guest is Noelia Dillingham from Houston, Texas, lives now in Houston, raised in a part of Texas called the Rio Grande Valley. Rio Grande Valley, Weslaco, Farr, Mission, Rio Grande City, Brownsville, Harlingen, all those little towns, McAllen, all those towns down there. Mostly people of Latin American or Spanish or Mexican, call them. Trying to be politically correct, but they're Spanish, mostly Spanish-speaking people. And it's an area of Texas that has not been forgotten, but does not have the voice or the political clout that maybe Houston or Dallas or some of the big cities would. And so there's a lot of poverty down there. I'm sure still a lot of poverty, even though it is much better now than it was. And you were born in the 50s in Rio Grande City. And went to public school because they, like you said, they didn't know what to do with you. But this teacher came in the seventh grade and started teaching you Braille to read with your eyes. Is that right?
Yes.
They didn't encourage you to read that with your fingers.
No.
And so you learned it, but it really wasn't that much help to you, was it?
No.
I mean, what could you do with it? You didn't have your Braille books?
No, I didn't have anything.
Didn't have any Braille books. You didn't have your. They didn't try to get your books in Braille.
No.
Because you had been surviving. You had been some way or another getting by through the first seven grades of school.
Right.
Annie, go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you're fine. Go ahead. Say whatever. We have plenty of time. We're talking about your life. So tell us what you were going to say.
Well, it was me improvising, you know. I would take everything home, and I had an uncle that would read some things for my sister. Helped me a lot with reading, you know, because she could see you perfect. And she helped me through the maps and, you know, the fractions in math books and things like that that I just couldn't see. She would help me.
And you had developed, you were young, you had a good memory, and so you could
memorize a lot.
You memorize a lot, but your sister would read things to you, and then the next day when it was called, you were called on in class, you'd just kind of remember.
Right.
But there was no way you could see the blackboard.
No.
But you did graduate from this public school.
I did.
And you kept improvising all through high school.
Yes.
And obviously this was a small school. I think you said your seventh grade class had 27.
Yeah, I graduated from the same kids that when I started school with in kindergarten. We graduated together in high school, about 27 kids.
And you knew nothing about being blind or nothing about other blind people. You knew no other blind people.
No, when I was like in the 12th grade, a small child came into our school who was totally blind.
Oh.
And it was the first time that I had even known of anybody else that was blind. But I was in 12th grade, and this child started kindergarten or first grade, and he was totally blind.
And that's the first blind, really totally blind child you ever saw.
That's right. And then, you know, when I graduated from high school, the counselor from the commission suggested that I go to AEB in Little Rock, Arkansas Enterprises for the Blind.
To
do a college prep program that he thought I should go to. So when I came, you know, I went for the summer, 3 months, and I came back home. You know, I didn't think I would go to college. I thought, well, I'm not going to be able to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so he suggested that I come to Houston to the Lighthouse for the Blind to learn clerical skills and become a mm-hmm. secretary of sorts, you know.
Yeah.
So my mother didn't want me to come this far. It was too far for her, you know, away from the family, and I'd never really been away from them, you know. So he told her that if I didn't do this, that he had to close my case as a homemaker. That, you know, there was nothing else he could do for me.
Well, and when you think about it, he's right. If you won't do what they want you to do, then they just
well, and there was nothing down there for else to do.
There was nothing for you to do down there other than find a husband and get married and have kids. I mean,
that was right, and that was not a very good possibility either.
Let's just don't quite leave high school yet. Did your high school? Their emphasis wasn't so much on football back then, was it?
Yes, it was.
Oh, it was. You did have football.
Football, basketball, baseball.
Yeah, and did you...
But I didn't get to participate because I didn't see Will, and they didn't think I could do any of it, or band.
Well, they didn't let girls play too much sports back then either. I mean, they were kind of...
It was baseball and basketball for girls, but I didn't get to play.
But not you, huh?
I didn't get to be... I wasn't allowed in homemaking.
Why?
Because I didn't see Will to sew or to do anything. And they didn't allow me in the band because of the same reason. I couldn't read the book for the band, meet the music. So I did the typing and the shorthand and the bookkeeping.
They wouldn't let you in home ec because you couldn't see.
Well, you know, like to sew. Or so they, you know, they didn't allow me to go in there.
Or they thought you couldn't sew. Blind girls sew all the time.
Oh, I know, because I do now.
You know that now. But back then, they
just didn't allow me to.
So, but you learned to type.
Yes, I did.
And take shorthand and those kinds of things, which are skills that have served you well.
Yes, they have.
Later in life. Okay, out of high school, on to, did you go to Little Rock? Did you do that Little Rock deal?
I did.
That's mainly to assess you, though, to see what you're good at, what you could do.
Right.
And they decided that you should go to college or not?
No.
You should go to the Lighthouse.
Yeah.
All right.
But they suggested, and that's finally my mother agreed, and I packed up my stuff, my clothes, and three suitcases is all I had, and everything that belonged to me was in there, and
mm-hmm.
I took a plane from McAllen to Houston Intercontinental. I had never been to Houston before.
That was the first time you'd ever flown on an airplane?
No, I had gone to Little Rock in an airplane.
Okay, you'd gone to Little Rock in an airplane.
That was my first one.
But you flew from McAllen
to Intercontinental.
To Intercontinental Airport in Houston, that big airport.
Yes, it is. And the counselor told me when I got my bags to go outside and look for a limousine bus. It was called the limousine bus.
Uh-huh.
And go, whenever they called out Rice Hotel, which used to be here, you know.
Sure.
No, not Rice, I'm sorry. Shamrock.
Shamrock Hotel. Well, the Rice Hotel was there, too, but the Shamrock Hotel was there.
But the Shamrock was down further down in south side of town.
Yeah, I know where it was.
Okay. And when they called that name for me to get off, and that I would be close to where I was going, the Commission for the Blind office was on Fannin. At that time.
Now, who were the commissioners there? Rod Lawson?
Yeah, at that time it was Rod Lawson and Bunk Goodrum, and my counselor was Gary Everhart.
Uh-huh.
And anyway, I never heard the man call the Shamrock. He never did call it out, and I was the only one left in the bus, and so I went up to him, and he says, well, I passed it about 2 miles back. And I says, oh, but, you know, I need to get off there. So he stopped the bus and let me out, got my suitcases out. There was a yellow cab. He put me in the cab, and he said, now, what address do you need? So I told him the address. So I got over to the office on Fannin, and I left my suitcases outside because, you know, I came from the farm. And the farm, well, you know, you never locked the door.
I know.
This was Houston in 1971, and it was not good, you know.
No, it wasn't good.
So I left my suitcases outside, and I went in and went up to the third floor where the commission was at. And I saw the receptionist, and I told her that I was there to see Gary Everhart. And he came out, and he says, where are your suitcases? And I says, oh, they're downstairs outside. And he ran down the stairs and out the door to make sure my suitcases were not caught.
And they were all three?
They were still there.
They were all still there.
They were still there. It was okay.
Well, that's pretty dangerous, though.
It was very dangerous.
Amazing. You didn't.
But, you know, I just didn't know any better. Like I said, I came from the farm, and, you know, we didn't know about locking doors.
You didn't know about crime and things like that?
No, we didn't. You know, that didn't exist down there.
That's pretty amazing. I've been up in that office on Fannin.
Yes.
And so they...
And then Gary took me down to the lighthouse where they put my suitcases under the switchboard area, and I went to class. That afternoon, somebody took my suitcases to the YWCA. That's where we all stayed back then, you know, the blind people.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to ride the city bus for the first time downtown to the Y with some of the other people that was staying there. So I made friends right away, and I got up to my room. I was on the sixth floor of this building, and, you know, I had a room with a bathroom and a little closet and a bed, of course, but there was no refrigerator, no stove, nothing like that. So, you know, it was like, what are we going to eat? You know, they gave us $24 to eat a month. That was all the money they gave us.
Now, you alluded to this, so let's go ahead and clear it up. You did not have an inside bathroom at home?
Yeah, we did later, much later.
Later.
Yeah, probably when I was, my mother had one built to the house when we were like probably 10 or 11 years old.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, but this little room had a bath and $24 a month to eat. Did you say?
Yes, that's what the commission gave us for maintenance, they called it. Maintenance money.
Could you eat on that at that point in time?
Well, you could have crackers and butter, peanut butter. Stop.
What are you? Who are you telling to stop?
My boy over here. My grandsons are here.
Your grandsons are there.
Yeah, and they just woke up.
Oh, they did. Well, they're ready for Grandma to fix them some breakfast, aren't they?
Oh, Grandpa's doing it.
Grandpa's going to do it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we don't mind them making noise in the background. That's not going to bother us.
Okay.
And so $24 a month, but you couldn't, I don't think in 1972, you couldn't eat on that. You couldn't live on that.
No, you couldn't.
So what did you do?
Well, I met a man a week after I got here. This one of the visually impaired ladies who was in training with me had a date with this man, and she didn't want to go out with him, so she introduced me to him, and that's David, and he knew my situation, so he did not. You know, he took me out for supper every night for a year.
Really?
Stop.
He took you out for supper every night for a year.
Yes, so I owed him.
You did, big time. Now, is this the man you married?
Yes, he is.
That's pretty amazing.
It is.
Because it just as easily could have been a bad situation for you.
It could have been. He was a nice person, and he helped me. He helped me, you know, wherever he could and however he could. And for main thing, he kept me from, he helped me with money so that I could eat.
He kept you from...
I couldn't ask my mother. She didn't have any.
Didn't have any money to give you, did she?
No. They didn't know.
Well, I don't see how they expected you to live on that amount of money. There was a cafeteria at the lighthouse.
Yes, there was, but it wasn't free.
It wasn't free. You had to buy meals there.
Yes.
I've been there. It was on West Dallas.
And I did get one good meal, maybe. You know, I got once a week or twice a week, I might be able to buy a meal, you know, because it wasn't that expensive even back then. But when you had $24, yes, it wasn't a whole lot, you know.
What were they trying to train you for?
Clerical secretary.
But this was the first time you'd really ever been out of Rio Grande City, other than going to Arkansas.
Yeah, and blind people too. Well, besides my stay in Arkansas.
Yeah, besides your stay in Arkansas. So you were around other blind people.
Right.
And you were away from home for the first time.
Yes.
Must have been pretty traumatic for you, 17, 18 years old.
You know, I didn't know to be scared. You know, when you're young, you just do what, you know, you do what you have to do, I guess.
Sure.
You don't have enough sense to be afraid. And now, you know, I think back, I says, wonder how in the world I did that, you know?
Well, about 72 is when I made the decision to move out of Houston. It had gotten too big. It had just gotten too big and bad and too much city for me. So I moved up here. I moved to East Texas in 72. And you were just arriving in the Bayou City back then.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, and but you learned English at an early. I mean, there were some kids.
Well,
in...
I learned English my first few grades. I went to kindergarten twice because I didn't know English.
Uh-huh.
And then the rule at the school was you better not speak Spanish at school. You would be punished.
So you had to learn English.
Yeah, there was, and that was the only way we learned really, was because they didn't allow us to speak Spanish. You'd be punished.
That's
nowadays, you know, you speak 2-3 languages in school, they don't tell you nothing.
No, they don't care now. And I don't know that that's bad or good.
I don't either, because you don't become proficient in any language that way.
Well, you certainly have a good command of English. You have an accent, but you have a good. And nowadays, bilingual people are highly valued, you know?
Yeah, I know, and I've used my skills that way too at Lighthouse where I worked. When I went to work at the Lighthouse, well, the first job I had after I got married and I had my my first daughter, who is Chrissy, she is she's a nurse now. But anyway, she was a baby when I went to work.
So you and this guy that this other girl didn't want to go out with got married.
Yes, we got married a year later.
He helped you while you were at the Lighthouse, while you were staying at the Y.
Yes,
he
helped me financially. He fed me. He took me out to dinner, and that was wonderful for me. Or took me out to eat something so that I didn't starve.
Yeah.
And then when we got married and we had our first child, Christy, I got a job at the Commission for the Blind. I was her first legally blind secretary.
At the office there on Fannin Street.
Yes, I started off on Fannin Street, and then they satellite that our counselor and teacher and I went off to the Lighthouse. We were officed at the Lighthouse for a while. And I worked there for a counselor named Frank Sablicka and a woman named Natalie Black. And I did okay. You know, I enjoyed it. I love those people. I still do. Frank is still alive. Natalie has passed away. Then there came a job open at the Lighthouse for a secretary in industrial division.
Now, this was during the days of Jerry Rujanek.
Yes.
Was in charge
boss
there.
She was still
a feared boss lady.
Yes, and I'll tell you, she made everybody shake.
She did.
Yeah.
I remember her.
Also, during that time, there was a man had come in who was going to be the assistant executive director. His name was Bob Kreider. And Bob Kreider was taken over, and he was from the north, and he was a military man, and he was tough too, you know, but really gentle, tough and gentle. I don't know how to say that, but anyway, I went to work for the Lighthouse for 50 cents more an hour. So by this time, I was making $6 an hour, and I thought, ooh, that's good money, you know.
So
back then,
50 cents more an hour than the commission was paying you, the Lighthouse offered you.
Yes.
50 cents more an hour doing what now? Typing?
Clerical, it was still clerical work. I ran the office, and the office did sales and industrial, writing letters and answering phones with four lines to answer. And I worked for four men, and they were all nice people. I enjoyed working for those men. I worked there for 5 years.
Now, at that time at the Lighthouse, were they making brooms and mops, or what did they do there?
They were making all that, dust mops and brooms and mops and scrub brushes and push brooms.
They made those at the Lighthouse?
Yeah, they had the machines there to make them, and at that time, the pens were also had come in, the markers. They made fine line markers for the government.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also beginning to bottle pinopine or pine oil. And at that time, the pine oil was bottled in cans, tin cans. It was
really,
yeah. That was at the beginning of this project, and so we had there was a lot of work to do, a lot of orders, and I had my second child. I had her in, while I was still working down there. She was born in 1977, and she was born with my eye problem.
Oh.
And so my husband noticed it when she was a week old. He was watching her one night, and he says, she's got white spots in her eyes. And I says, oh, no. And So the next day we went to the hospital where she was born, St. Joseph's, and, they told us that that it was definitely cataracts.
Okay, but could they do anything? Did they? Were they able to do anything for her?
Just a second.
Okay.
I'm on a conference call. Please go. Be right there.
She has her grandchildren.
Okay, sorry.
That's all right. That's no problem.
Were they able to help her?
Yeah, were they able to?
Yes, they sent her to the medical center to see a Dr. Helen Hittner, who immediately took her in, and they operated on her, and she has wonderful results. She has 20/20 with contacts, okay? 20/20 and 20/30.
And so she can drive.
She can drive. She's a math teacher. She can do everything. She's wonderful.
And she avoided what happened to you.
Oh yes.
She
grew up in a very normal childhood with all, you know, she did everything that her friends did and.
Sure.
You know, it was, 25 years later, you know, medicine was different. Plus, we were here instead of the valley, you know. And she has very good results from her having cataracts.
And but your husband knew what to look for.
I think he was looking for something, you know.
Sure.
You know, the first girl, she didn't have any problems, thank God. But the second daughter did.
So we know now by that it is a genetic problem.
It is hereditary. Yes.
And can be passed down to,
She hasn't had children yet, but she knows that, you know, she'll have that chance of having a baby like that. So
let's take just a short break, and you can explain to your grandchildren what's going on, and we'll kind of finish up your life in just a minute, and more, our guest, Noelia Dillingham, more of Blind Like Me, in just a second. Hang on.
Even an hour away, but you're keeping your distance. We're more than a million miles apart these days. I'm falling forward while you wait behind. Lost by our reasons.
Know about the Blind Handyman Listserv?
The thing I like the best about the Blind Handyman List, great place to exchange information and gather ideas on anything to do with being a handyman around the house.
I found out how to fix my garbage disposal on the Handyman List, and it worked.
If you'd like to join the Blind Handyman List, send a blank email to blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com. That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
The thing I like about the Blind Handyman List, I'm the moderator, and I can delete you if I want to. So don't get out of line, stay on topic.
That's blindhandyman-subscribe@yahoogroups.com.
Our guest is Noelia Dillingham from Houston, Texas, born and raised in an impoverished area of Texas we call the Rio Grande Valley, becoming much less so as the Hispanic population in Texas increases. In fact, they say, and if you know this or not, probably so, by 2020 there will be more people of Hispanic origin than there will be people who are not. Did you know that?
Yes.
Yeah, so y'all are going to be the majority.
Right.
And you get to tell us what to do, don't you?
I don't think so.
You don't? Oh, now, come on. Anyway, she has done well. Where you spent a lot of time out at the Lighthouse for the Blind on West Dallas Street in Houston, Texas.
Yes, I sure have. I spend the majority of my life there, I suppose. Because after I quit in 1979 and... I went to work for a company that made pipeline cleaners.
Mm-hmm.
It was called Polypig by Net.
Was this a better job, paid more per hour?
It paid more. It paid. I always left for a little better pay, you know.
Yeah.
And I worked over there for a couple of years. And one day, a man came in, and it was like a trailer house, and it was family run. Mama Knapp, she made the Polypigs. It was her invention. And, you know, they sold them to the Alaskan Pipeline, and as big as 48 inches and then as small as 1 inch.
What is a Polypig? You got to tell us.
It's a pipeline cleaner. It's the way you would force it into a pipe to clean a pipe. All kinds of pipes, you know, oil. Even Hershey's chocolates would buy one to clean their pipes of chocolate. And they were different types. There was some that had carbide around them to scrape inside a pipe, you know, a gas line or oil line and water lines, you know.
And this lady had invented this. Is that right?
Wait a second. 1 second.
Okay.
What's going on?
Listen, I tell her to please hold.
Grandchildren.
Yes.
Grandchildren. Okay. Someone else?
Somebody was here and I didn't know. It's
and
okay.
You didn't know. Okay. Now, this lady had invented this thing.
Yes.
This Polypig thing.
Right.
She had a patent on it, I guess.
Yes.
And so she made them. They actually made them, manufactured them there where you were.
Mm-hmm.
And sold them.
Right.
Okay.
And they sold them all over the world.
Uh-huh.
And I was inside sales. I took orders. I feel, you know, I typed the invoices and sent the orders out to the shop that was next door. And
uh-huh.
And that too was a real good job until one day a man came in and beat up a woman that worked there. And he was mad at her, his girlfriend, and came in and beat her up, and it scared us. It scared the rest of us really bad because it was just women there working. The men had all gone out.
So he came in the office
and
proceeded to beat this woman.
Yes, he did. And what happened was she had to leave because she was, you know, cut up.
Yeah.
And so when my husband found out, he says, you can't work there anymore.
I don't blame him.
He said, that's too dangerous, and you got little kids, and, you know. So anyway, I quit. And I stayed home one summer. And I got tired. I said, man, I've got to go to work. I don't like being home.
You didn't care for not working. Liked it better going to work.
I did. So that year, that fall, my youngest child went to school. And, you know, with the two kids gone to school, you know, I wouldn't have nothing to do at home.
Yeah, be all by yourself, nothing to do.
And I called the lighthouse up, and there was this man I had worked for over there named Archie. He was the accountant. And I said, you know, I was just calling to say hi and see how you all are doing and, you know, whatever. He says, you know, we were going to call you. He says, we have a job opening in the county and wondered if you wanted to come work. I says, well, I'll come and talk to you about it on Monday. And he said, nope, just come to work.
You don't need to talk to me. There's no point in talking. We already know who you are. Just come to work.
Just come to work. So I did accounts receivable for 2 or 3 years. I did accounts receivable, typing invoices.
Yeah.
That was when the government bought a lot of things from the lighthouse, you know, GSA. And I typed, we typed invoices by, you know, manual. Well, not manual. They were electric typewriters.
Yeah, but you typed them.
I typed all day long. It was work, 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 work. And, you know, you did all of whatever you had to do with that pertains to accounting.
Uh-huh.
And then I had an opportunity to go work in Aids and Appliances downstairs. They were selling Braille paper and watches and canes, you know, just a few things like that. That was in the library. It used to be Margaret Sandifer's library. You remember
Margaret? I know Margaret Sandifer. Yes, I do.
And so I asked for a transfer down there to that department, and they gave it to me, and I worked there for a while, and then they opened the new building was built down the street at 3602, and I went to work over there, and the store had, I don't know, over 300 or 400 products that we sold.
But they didn't call it a store then when you first went to work for them. They were just selling a few items, Braille paper and...
And, there was not a whole lot of things for sale there. There were just a few things. And when I took it over, I enlarged it considerably. We had sewing aids, cooking aids, braille paper, slave styluses, braillers, canes, watches, clocks, anything that talks, you know, everything. Talking things, calculators that talk. And so we had a big array of products, and we worked. I worked over there in the new building next to the low vision clinic, which gave me their clients came over and bought at the store.
Yeah.
So we really flourished there, you know. Then when they built another building in front of that building, the lighthouse expanded, and they put us in the front of the. We had an outside entrance to the store, and I worked there for another two or three years, and finally I just decided I didn't want to work anymore, and I resigned, that was in 2002, the end of 2002. So I have not worked at the lighthouse since then, but. Now I'm back trying to find something to do because I'm bored again.
Well, you are heavily involved with the American Council of the Blind, aren't you?
Oh yes, since 1986. I've had offices in that organization. I was their secretary for 6 years, statewide, and then I've held offices within my local chapter too. I've done first vice president, second vice president, but I don't want to be president. That is a lot of work.
You don't want to be president?
Uh-uh.
You don't?
Not yet.
Not yet?
No.
So there may come a day when you won't be.
Well, there might be a day when, you know, the older people are dying that are the ones that are our leaders, you know.
Yeah.
And we have to take up the rope where they leave it off.
Take up the slack, yes, you do.
Yeah.
Because my first meeting with you was when you called me and talked to me about coming to the ACB Texas convention, which I didn't do. Had great plans to. Had my speech already. We missed my speech. I was going to make a speech on Saturday.
Yes, I know.
And
so sorry you missed it.
I am too. The story's going around that I had a heart attack. I didn't have a heart attack. I have some heart problems, but I haven't had another heart attack. Thank heavens.
Thank you.
I was having some pretty good chest pains that morning, and I just decided. Well, my wife said, if you go, I'm going to have to take off and go with you. You're not going by yourself. Tom and I were going to ride down. She was going to stay home, and she decided I couldn't go by myself. She didn't want me. I guess if I was going to die, she wanted to be there.
Yeah.
So I missed the state convention this year, but there's always next year, and maybe I'll be able to make it.
Corpus Christi next year.
So that's down close to where you were raised, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, it'll be hot.
Yeah, but we'll be right on the water. So it should be fun.
Well, we're going to Padre Island in a month.
Okay.
We're leaving on the 9th and come back on the 16th, so we'll be gone. We'll be at South Padre Island. The kids all go to the... There's a swimming pool. We rent this condo. It's a three-apartment condo, and there's a swimming pool there, and the kids don't go to the beach. Hell, they just spend their time in the swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
We could do that at home, you know?
Yeah, that's true.
So you worked most of your life at the Lighthouse for the Blind.
Yes.
And your last incarnation there was running. You were the manager of the store?
Yes.
Are they? They're not selling computers in that store, are they? Still not doing that?
No.
No.
So.
But all sorts of... I guess it's still operating, and they have all sorts of things for blind people there.
Yeah, they sell magnifiers and mirrors and games of all kinds. You know, we had at the ACBT convention, the Lighthouse donated a Scrabble game, a Braille Scrabble. And that was a very nice gift, and we had an auction that was really, really good.
Yeah. So if you're in the Houston area and you want to look at products for blind people, it would be a good thing to go by?
Yes, it would be. Mm-hmm.
Is they're still open even though you're not there?
They are.
They were still able to
go on.
They were still able to operate without you, huh?
Yes.
Well, it sounds like you have your life together. What do you grandkids? How many grandchildren do you have?
Three.
And they're all three there?
No, two. Two are here. They're two big ones.
The two big ones are there. How old are the
they're all boys. They're 9 and 7.
Uh-huh.
And the baby's in Dallas with the other grandmother, and he is 2 and a half.
Or what are you and those boys going to do all day today?
We're going to knock a wall down next door.
Next door?
Next door to us, there's a, the lady who lives next door has a wall that's a fence. It's supposed to be a fence, but it's a cement wall or block wall.
Mm-hmm.
And she wants it down. And so me and my husband and the two kids, we're going to go bang on it.
You're going to tear the wall down.
That'll give the boys something to do.
Sounds like a good way to vent your frustrations.
It is.
Hitting the wall and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Noelia Dillingham has been our guest, and good luck with your wall tearing down, and we'll put this on weekend after this one, okay?
Okay.
Thank you much, and we'll talk with you.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Noelia Dillingham, very sweet lady, very nice, gentle lady. She had, I guess, maybe no harder time than some of the rest of us, but came from the Rio Grande Valley and did quite well. Seems very happy and very well-adjusted as a blind person. And that's what we're after, is well-adjusted blind people. People who are handling this inconvenience we call blindness. If you are one of those and you'd like to be a guest on our show, we'd love to have you. You can write me at Phil, P-H-I-L, at philpar.net. P-H-I-L at P-H-I-L-P-A-R-R.net. And that'll get you to me, and we'd love to have you. If you are interested in helping with the show, we're still looking for someone to do our little program called On the Blind Side, which is little articles we gather off the Internet about blind people who are doing things. It's pretty easy to do. So if you're a radio person and you think you'd be interested in doing that, email me and let me know. Phil at philpar.net. Thanks for listening. See you next week. Bye-bye.